This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment.
You caught the vision.
You want your family to serve God.
But sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision. Hey, Hal, do visions have feet?
Shh. How do you get from principle to practice?
What do you need to know about the issues affecting your family?
How do you apply God's Word in the 21st century?
Let's talk about it.
This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Well, hello. This is Hal.
And Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to Making Biblical Family Life Practical.
Last week, we had an open mic night and had terrible technical difficulties. So tonight, we're going to be answering your questions. We've been collecting questions on our Facebook page. We've got some questions held over from last week. And we're going to be talking about all kinds of things tonight. Hal, hope you've got your thinking cap on, because some of these are challenging questions.
That's right. We're performing live without a net, and so we welcome your questions. And, in fact, if you're listening to the live broadcast, you can go to our show page. Could you give us the URL for that, my dear?
Yes, it is.
Go to the ultimateradioshow.com/showhost.
Go to ultimateradioshow.com and click on our smiling faces.
Right. Go to ultimateradioshow.com. And click on Hal and Melanie's face. Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, it sounds like our kids' advice on that. Okay, so, very good. Well, we have all kinds of questions.
Yes. Do you want a hard one or an easy one first, Hal?
Let's have a warm-up.
Okay. Stacy asked on our Facebook page,
yes.
I'd like to know how to better handle the transition from sweet little boy to standoffish young man. My second child was very attached to me and shy. He's now 14 and a half and awesome. We have a great relationship, but I have to practice a lot of restraint. I'm very loving and I've always hugged my kids a lot. He's still very loving, but in different ways. Do I accept this as a part of my child growing up, or do I bring this up?
Well, first off, I would say, yeah, your little boy is growing up, and that's going to change things.
And they go through a stage when they're like when they're changing,
mm-hmm.
when they're changing into a man and their voice is cracking and they're having a growth spurt. And for some kids, it'll be at 11. For some, it'll be 15. But they go through a stage where they're really awkward with affection, don't you think?
Prickly is the word, I think. Yeah, they're like little hedgehogs.
Yeah, they don't want their mamas hugging them. They definitely don't want kisses.
Well, I can always tell, you know, when I talk to our sons on the phone, I usually, when I hang up, I'll say, I love you. And I can generally detect a change there, because there's the first couple of years they won't return that, you know, they don't kind of feel comfortable with it, and then they reach some point and say, oh, okay, I'm grown up, I'm a man, it's not going to harm my masculinity to express some affection.
Yeah, they kind of have to get old enough to feel secure in their masculinity.
Yeah, I think that's
right. And so don't be hurt and don't take it personally.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's better to practice the manly hug. Yeah, the mamas do all squishy squeezes and want to kiss them. Instead, give them a strong hug, clap them on the back, give them a side hug.
Right.
Say, I'm proud of you. Yeah. You know, punch them in the shoulder. You know, because they want to see themselves as men.
And they want to know that other people see them as men, too.
And that's why they're a little sensitive about that mommy affection, and they will grow out of it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, they will indeed.
And it's kind of neat to see that, to see the older boys. You know, when they're in their late teens and their 20s, they're delighted to see their mom and dad, and they're delighted to hug us and grab us. And I visited one at college recently, and he swept me off my feet. You know, and at 12, no.
No.
At 12, he would have gone, Mom.
Yeah, so just remember, they're not really into the gushy-mushy kind of affection during that transitional period, for sure. And so don't feel bad about it. So,
okay, let's see. Here's another one.
Before you do that, let me just say something. If you're new to the program, I just want to tell you, we do not have a studio. This is not a soundproof room. In fact, this isn't, well, it is a room. It's our living room, okay? And people live here. Lots of people. Lots of small people.
Lots of small, noisy people.
Small, noisy people and large, noisy dogs. And so you may hear real life as our background music.
Yeah, and large, noisy people coming home from work and from football and stuff.
That's true.
Anyway, you'll hear our real life, and that's because, you know what? There's enough people out there making you feel terrible because you're not perfect.
Yeah.
We're not perfect, and neither are you, but
no.
God is.
So if it's distracting, I apologize. We do what we can. All right.
Okay.
So let's say, what's the next question then?
Okay.
I did see some. You shared some of them with me earlier.
Yes. But. Well, here's another one. We'll keep the name secret because she
Thank
wants
you.
To surprise him.
Okay.
Okay. She says, I need help and ideas for our wedding anniversary at home tomorrow.
Congratulations.
Yes. Happy anniversary. Here's the kicker. We are currently staying in an RV park in our camper trailer.
Mm-hmm.
We have 3 daughters and 3 sons. My husband will be at work tomorrow and I'll have the car, but money is limited. Ideas for what we can do to show my husband, man of this family, how much we love and appreciate him and how thankful I am that he chose me as his wife. Please help. You know, we've been in this position a lot, having no money, a little bit of time, and
lots of company.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of our boys, this really surprised me, one of our teenage boys, which shows they do grow out of that stuff about not wanting attention, suggested last year when we would celebrate birthdays, he said, you know, why don't we just all go around and in a circle and everybody say something they appreciate or they respect or they love about the person whose birthday it is. That has been special.
It has. And now when you do that, you don't want to just spring that on people because it can be very, again, if you've got young men in a transition.
Well, 13-year-old.
That can be like, why don't you just shoot me? Mama, just shoot me, please. Don't make me.
So you want to talk about them early.
So think about it, maybe coach them a little bit. But, yeah, just let people know, hey, we're going to do this, and you just want a sentence or two. It doesn't have to be a paragraph or an epic poem or anything. But,
you know, one thing we did, we had a Valentine's Day kind of like that. We could not afford to go out.
Mm-hmm.
We had children at home that needed support. We're going through a difficult time.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, you know, let's just stay at home. Let's not make it so much about us this time.
Yeah.
And we spent some time sharing our love story with our children,
mm-hmm.
telling the story of how we met and how that all worked out and how we did, how proposed and just the whole love story.
Yeah.
I think that's really valuable. And then it'd be really neat to have the children each share something they appreciate about you and your husband and their marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's in your marriage, to say something about their family or how glad they are that you two are together. Because the whole point of these anniversaries is to mark the day.
That's an important point. And that's true of all holidays. You know, the point of them is the memory, is to recollect particularly what God has done.
Yeah.
And that may be simply a remembrance of his providence, and it may be a testimony of incredible divine interventions in your life, you know, whatever, you know, is appropriate in your own circumstance. But we really lose the purpose of holidays if we don't tell the stories.
Yeah.
You know, if the 4th of July is just about cookouts and water skiing, then it's just a summer day, you know, and if anniversaries are just mom and dad get dressed up and they leave and then they come back a couple hours later and smile quietly. You know, that doesn't edify the kids. That doesn't bring back all, hopefully you have the conversations with yourself. But, you know, it's really important for our kids that they understand, you know, what goes into our relationship as romantic adults.
And now, what if your children are old enough to leave? You know, I still recommend you do those things. They're really fun.
Yeah.
But if your children are old enough to leave there at the RV park, then one of the best anniversaries that I remember that I really enjoyed the most, we went on a hike.
Hmm.
Do you remember that?
Oh, we've been on so many hikes.
We went up to Ravens Rock together for the day.
But we took the whole family, didn't we?
No, we didn't.
It was
just you and me.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
We might have taken whoever was the baby at the time. I don't remember.
That's true.
But, you know, sometimes you can do things just to spend some focused time together, do something that you used to do before you're married. That might be play putt-putt, you know, or go on a hike.
Go to an art museum. A lot of times those are very low cost, if any.
But just, you know, time together doesn't have to be a fancy dinner.
Right.
It doesn't have to be expensive.
Right.
You know, we went to the cheapo movie theater a couple weeks ago and had a great time.
Yeah.
You know, so if you can leave the children, you might want to do something like that. but still make sure your children hear the stories. But if you have to stay home, that's okay too. You know, get something, make something a little bit more fun for dinner. Maybe watch a romantic movie on Netflix or something as a family.
And if you can't afford to bring in steak or boiled shrimp or something for a fancy dinner, then make a fancy dessert.
Or just make a dinner that you all love.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
We had homemade pizza the other night, and I thought it was wonderful.
You know, there's something that we say in the our book, My Beloved and My Friend. We're talking about marriage, and particularly about the closest part of the marriage relationship. And we say, you know, nobody else is involved. There's no scoreboard. Nobody is gonna hold up a sign that said, "Well, you only got 6.8 on that romantic turn."
Yeah.
You know, and so we get kind of bound up in the world's Hallmark and Hollywood expectations to say you're supposed to go to a fancy restaurant and you're supposed to go dancing, or you're supposed to give a gift of jewelry or something. And a lot of times you just simply can't. That's just out of reach. You know what? We don't need to be disappointed. That's the world's scoreboard.
It is. And, you know, it bothers me sometimes that we hear Christian teachers say, "Oh, you've got to have a date night." Well, there were times we couldn't have a date night.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any money. We didn't have any family within 1,000 miles to watch the children. Our children were too young to leave.
But
you know what? We still had a great relationship.
Well, and the important part of that is it's not that we made reservations somewhere. The important part is that we focused on each other.
Right.
That we turned our minds away from the daily cares, from the work, or from the challenges of homeschooling or whatever it is. But just to say, what's important about our relationship? What do I value? What do I love the most about you? You know, here's another thing you can do, too. We talked about this in a marriage retreat we did recently. It's kind of fun to take some time and come up with 5 things that you love the best or that you love a great deal about your mate.
That's a great idea.
And you may not share all 5 of them. But
come
up with something and give a concrete example. It's not enough to say, "I love you because you're wonderful." Oh, I know. Be concrete. Say, "I love,
love the way that you showed integrity when your boss asked you to do something wrong and you refused to do it. And you know it cost you your job. I really respect you." You know, that means a lot to a man to say something like that.
It does.
And so, you know, think of something. And you know, I told a mom to do this one time, and she said, "There isn't anything. There's nothing I respect about him. There's nothing I like about him."
Wow.
And I said, "Okay, well, you know, you married the guy. Is there anything you used to like about him?"
Yeah, what was there at the beginning?
And she said, "Oh, yes, you know, I love the way he used to speak to groups of students about Christian worldview." And I said, "You know what? Next time it seems appropriate, why don't you just say, 'You know, honey, I really respect you. I love the way he used to talk about Christian worldview to the groups of students and really impact their lives. That's really neat.'" And you know what? She started doing that, and it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
But that couple came so close to divorce, and we saw them the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And what were they like now?
They're thick as thieves. I mean, they are tightly wound.
They are so
they could
keep their hands off each other.
They are in great shape and getting better. And it's just, I think coming back to one another and remembering, this is the person God's given me.
Yes.
You know, this is the right person for me to be married to.
Yeah.
And so that's all. Those are all ideas. Trust us. We've been there. We're kind of there right now. And it can still be a wonderful place.
Do what makes you happy and not the rest of the world.
There you go.
Okay.
Right.
Now it is about time to talk about our resources. I want to tell them 2 exciting things tonight. Let's see. Let's talk about Boyhood Bootcamp.
That is neat. We just kicked that off. This is a brand new thing we're doing. It is a 4-week webinar series, okay? It's an afternoon series. And normally we do these things in the evening, but we wanted to kind of give a crack for those of our listeners in the Eurozone to see if they wanted to come in, well, so they didn't have to get up at 2 a.m. to go to the webinar. And these are 4 sessions talking about the challenges and the blessings of raising young sons. Now we've got some for older, you know, parents of older sons. These are for the younger ones. These are the ones where you're thinking, "I had no idea they were so noisy. I didn't know there was that much dirt in the yard. You know, I don't think the warranty on this paint is going to last anything like they promised. When you're having those kind of thoughts running through your head, and you know what, it's a blessing. But there's lots of things that you have to take into account, and there's a lot that we've learned, so we want to share that with you. Now, if you would like to be involved in this, it's...
You go to raisingrealmen.com/boyhood.
Boyhood, yes.
And it's not too late because it's completely recorded.
Right.
You'll see everything, video, slides, chat, and you can catch up and join us live next week. And those recordings, you can access them anytime. So even if that Monday afternoons doesn't work for you,
yeah,
that's all right. And, you know, I wish I'd known all that stuff when our oldest children were those ages, you know?
Yeah, we have lost a lot because we have lost our larger community, and we have lost the blessings of a large family. And so there's a lot of things that they hit us now, and you say, ah, what was that? Oh, gracious. And then you go through the process, and you say, oh, well, that's over. Well, how much better if you know what's about to happen? It's kind of like the difference between going prepared and unprepared for childbirth. You know, it's the same birth, but if you know what you're going into and you have some strategies for dealing with it, then when it happens, it may still be a lot of work, but you can say, well, they said it was going to be like this. You know, it's not a total shock. And so we want to encourage you. Yeah, come on and join us. It's raisingrealmen.com/boyhood. And all of the information out there is what you need is on our website.
This is a great question.
Yes.
Okay. This writer asks, can you address young men who are unaware that their reactions seem angry and frightening sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
It's not anger, but frustration that pops out and startles others. Not sure how to help him see how it's coming across. He gets very upset if others think he's scary.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is so common.
You know what one of the hallmarks of true mature adulthood is? It's having somebody else's point of view.
Being able to see things from somebody else's perspective.
Being able to think in your head, you know, what I'm about to say could be misunderstood. Or to know, hey, if I let fly with the anger or the frustration or stress that I'm feeling right now, I might frighten women and small children. You know? And the second part of that too is when young guys are growing up, they do not realize how big and how strong they get how quickly.
Or how deep their voices are. And, you know, I know, I'm a girl, that deep voice in anger is frightening. You know, even if you know it's your son, even if you know he's not going to do anything wrong, you know you're safe, it causes a fear in you.
Get a little reaction.
And the way that I've handled it is to, once he's calmed down a little bit, just sit down very calmly and say, I need to explain something to you. In fact, I had to do this tonight.
Did you then?
Yes. Although it wasn't me he was harassing. But I said, I need to explain something to you. You know, you're a man. You're a young man, and you're still in training, but you're a man. And you've got a deep voice, and you're really tall. You're taller than most men on the earth. You're big. You're strong. And you have a choice to make. You can use that strength, that manliness, to protect and take care of people,
uh-huh.
or you can use it to bully, frighten, and scare people.
Uh-huh.
And maybe you don't mean to. I don't think our child meant to, by the way.
That's good. I'm glad.
Maybe you don't mean to, but you are frightening people, and you've got to stop. You know, there's a responsibility that comes with strength.
Yeah, there is.
You know, there's a noblesse oblige. You know, I'm mm-hmm. stronger than everyone else. That means I've got to control it better than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to be careful. There's women and children around.
And it is okay. All right, we're going to give you dispensation. It is okay to have different rules for the boys and for the girls. You know, I don't know how many times I've told them. Now, we have six young men first. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many times I have had to tell them and coach them and say, son, you don't say that kind of thing to a woman. You don't ever do that to a female at any age. You know, somebody was picking at a girl's hair or something. I said, you don't mess with a girl's hair. You know, there's just something that they have to understand. This is etiquette and consideration between the guys and the girls.
Now, you tend to get two kinds of reactions from guys about this.
Right.
One set of guys gets mad. You know, how dare they think I'm into such and such, or how dare they react this way? And the other side are like, oh, I can't believe it, you know. And both reactions are wrong, and you just got to say, look, son, you got to get a grip. You know, this is part of being a man. God gave you these abilities, because you know what? One day, you're going to need to look at a child and say, don't talk to your mother that way.
Yeah, right. That, kind of like we're saying to you.
Yeah, and so he's got to hear the authority in your voice. God gave your deep voice authority.
True.
Don't use it against your mama and your little sisters.
This was the thing that really helped me in my parenting as my sons got older. I realized that as they became young men, that I needed to do less discipline and direction, but I needed to do a lot more coaching, because I was about to turn them loose out into the adult world, and they needed to understand, you know, son, if you stand that close to a man face to face, that's a sign of belligerence. Maybe you don't mean it, you know.
Yeah,
but if you do that,
yeah,
if you do
that,
you know, if you do that to somebody, if you get angry with somebody and step closer to them, you are challenging them, and maybe you don't intend to. But if they pop you in the snoot, that's what you invited.
Yeah, and so you just kind of have to talk to them about that stuff, explain it.
Just the same as when you tell your 10-year-old daughter, you know what, you're rolling your eyes. And that's going to get you in a world of trouble with me first, and then with any other adult that you encounter in your young life. If you roll your eyes, then people are going to be really, really angry with you. A lot of times they're not even aware of what they're doing. So that coaching is a really critical role that you're taking on. So
here's a challenging question.
A challenging question.
Someone says, is your book about staying married to your best friend, or how to be married to your best friend?
Uh-huh.
I can't say I married my best friend, but I'd love to learn how to be married to my best friend without getting remarried, of course.
That's subtitle, yes.
Yeah, suggestions on how to rebuild a relationship where everything you do brings back bad memories.
Mm.
You know, it's hard when you've got so much baggage together, but part of it is to realize you have no ability to change them, but you have tons of ability to change yourself.
Yeah, you know, I think Gary Smalley was the first one that kind of pointed that out to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of his books, I think it was If Only He Knew, he just said, if you've got problems in your marriage, it's probably your fault. I mean, yeah.
That's the book
for the guys, you know. And he's saying, if there's a relationship issue in your marriage, you are probably at the root of it.
Now, what he was not doing is blaming the victim. But what he's saying is that you can't, whatever the problem is in marriage, you can only impact what you do.
Exactly. That's the point of it. Yeah, that's what I was trying to get across. But as we change, as we become better mates, as we become better friends, that invites the other to return that. Now, one thing that we have noticed, and we got to use this one just this weekend, let's say that you've got a fractured relationship, and it may be in your marriage, it may be with your kids, it may be with a neighbor or an extended relative or whatever. You've got a bad relationship. You've been at fault at least part of the time. And
even if it's mostly their fault.
Yeah, but if there's something, you know, if there's something that you've done that's offended them rightly or wrongly, and God has put it on you, you've been convicted, you're going to change it. Well, you know what? So let's say that you change your behavior, say you're not doing this anymore. It's going to get worse between you before it gets better, because the other person has been hurt before, and they say, okay, what are they sneaking around about now?
What do they want? What do they want from me?
I don't believe that there's actually a change. We had the greatest testimony from somebody that had an early reviewer of our book, that she had had a bad relationship with her husband recently, and she decided, I am not going to criticize him. I am not going to rag him or complain at him or gripe or, you know, I've stopped that. And Sunday morning, they got up, she comes down, the usual stress getting ready for Sunday school and everything, and she caught herself, and she said, I'm not going to do this. She just closed her mouth, she walked out of the room, went and prayed, and her husband's staring like, what was that? And all day long, she would catch herself. She'd be right about to zing him one and say, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. I've stopped doing that. And she controlled her tongue all day long, and her husband was in disbelief and shock, and he kept like throwing bait out in the water. I said, something is wrong. Something is wrong with my wife. She is not responding to this jousting that I'm doing. And she just took it. She just took it all day long, you know, and probably was thinking, this is really, you know, I'm being punished here. This isn't getting better. He got to the end of the day and he came to her and says, look, I don't know what's happened, but something has changed and you have changed, and whatever it is, I want some of it. And you know what? That's kind of what happened with you and me when we were courting. Yeah. It wasn't like a, you know, marriage stress, but when we were courting, she picked up one of Gary Smalley's books. And there was one for the girls and one for the guys. And she said, oh, look, there's one you can. Well, I was being rebellious that day. I didn't want to. And so I got a different book. Well, over the next week, her interaction with me changed and it became better. It wasn't bad to begin with, but I mean, there was a definite change in the, you know, the interaction between us. And I said, whoa, this is really serious stuff. And I went and I snuck back over to the bookstore and got the other book. And it was a good choice. And so, you know that if you do make a change, hold on and hold the course for a while, yeah, and let them, you know, see that you intend to make it last and come back around. Don't give up.
A great way to make that change,
yes,
is, like how I said earlier, with to make a list of 5 things you appreciate about your mate and purpose to tell them so. You know, to mention one of them every day. And with a real evidential example. And it's amazing how that begins to rebuild relationships.
Well, hello there. This is Hal.
And Melanie.
And we are back with Making Biblical Family Life Practical. We apologize for that. We have just a simple cutoff on our phone connection, so we are back now. And thank you for sticking with us. We were talking about a young man, he's going to be 6 in just a little bit, who seems to be all wound up and obsessed with spooky, with spirit, I would say the supernatural type stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing which came to my mind is the verse in Philippians, which says, finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute. If there's any excellence, if anything is worthy of praise, then let your minds dwell on these things. Okay? And you've got to, you know, you look at some of these type of things, any of the stuff that's got the darkness in it like that,
yeah,
that seems to revel in the darkness, that's not letting your mind dwell on the profitable things.
And sometimes those things are very exciting to young men.
Mm-hmm.
They like the thrill of being a little bit scared. They like the thrill of the excitement of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with my younger children, I've learned to ask as we watch kids grow up.
Yeah.
I always ask myself, if it looks like this at 5, what's it going to look like at 15?
Yeah.
And that's pretty terrifying when you're talking about the dark stuff.
Yes, because when you see what's acceptable out in the culture now, you know, there's not a real upper cap on it, or lower cap, if you will. And so, yeah, I would say it's a good time to start steering him away from this.
In fact, I'd probably just cut it out.
You think so? Yeah.
I'd probably have a talk with him, and I'd share that verse and say, you know, I feel convicted that we haven't been focusing on the right things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd probably get rid of anything that just made me feel uneasy.
And
was he going to blow up? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to whine? Yes. Is he going to pitch a fit? Yes. You know what? You can live through it.
Yeah, there's another verse in Philippians that says to do all things without grumbling or complaining.
Yes, and if
okay,
you continue to grumble,
yep,
you say, son, the verse says do all things without grumbling or complaining. You are not allowed to talk for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And the next time you say you're not allowed to talk for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You're not allowed to talk for 15 minutes. And yeah, you know what? If he goes an hour without talking, it won't kill him, and it will certainly help your nerves.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, so much easier to deal with that when it's young, and
yes,
we try to steer away from that.
Yes.
In fact, we do steer away. We do steer away. So, let's see, what else have we got?
I'm looking at the other question. There's
got a
ton of great questions out there.
Yes, there are.
Okay, let's see.
Pick one.
At what age do you recommend is best for boys to start playing a sport? I'll tell you what.
It depends.
We disagree with most people here.
Okay.
Because I see little 5-year-olds playing organized sports, and I don't like it. I think it is too stressful. on the family life and on the child. And there's just not much point in it. They're not, their competitiveness hasn't really developed by that age.
Yeah.
They don't have the attention span. I think it's mostly for the parents.
Some of that, well, you can tell that from some parents it really is. Some parents it really is.
I wouldn't consider it before 7. And really, we started one of ours at 7, and it was too early.
Now, you know, I'm assuming that the question means an organized team-based sport.
Yes.
You know, if you like to play golf and you want to start teaching your young man how
take
to
take him along with
golf,
you, yeah,
that's fine. Or, you know,
or skiing or tennis or anything else.
Or bicycling or whatever. I mean, there's things that you can do at young ages.
But an organized team sport, I think probably 9 is probably a good, you know, somewhere 9 to 11 is a great time to start.
Yeah, and one of the things you gotta remember with the team sports, even if they are, you know, even if they are church-based, you know, church league sport or a homeschoolers-only kind of team or something, you're still dealing with a whole lot of families, and there's social issues to it. It's not just a matter of learning to interact on the field, but you're going to be exposed to a lot of other families' issues, and you've got to be prepared to deal with those. You're going to, you know, it's like if you send your child to a Christian school, guess what? He's not going to be there surrounded by Christian kids. He's
yeah.
going to be there with some kids who are young believers, some kids who are in rebellion. You know, it's going to be a mix, and
yeah.
you have to be able, yeah, got to be prepared to deal with all of the larger social aspects of it. And so it's not just a matter of, oh, we're all going to get together and have fun playing ball.
And they will enjoy it a lot more when they're a little bit older and they've got more competitiveness and more ability.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes more about the child and less about the parent.
And sometimes, you know, some of them will come to you. You know,
yeah.
some of them will say, hey, I would really love, that's what happened. That's how we got in,
yeah.
got involved in football. Because we had a son who just had a passion for the sport and he desperately wanted to play. You know, other boys you probably are going to need to nudge and maybe not into team sports. That might be a good thing to, hey, would you like to learn tennis? Would you like to learn to play racquetball or, you know, golf or bicycling or something that maybe they could do with one or two people for company and not, you know, a large group that they are uncomfortable with. So, it, you know, a lot of it depends on the individual child and on what's available in the area and
mm-hmm.
what's plausible for the family. So, you know, we can't say start them at 7. It's not that simple.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
But don't start them at 5.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Okay. How would you deal with a teenage son who feels he is never wrong?
Okay.
I homeschool him and find it tremendously frustrating to try and teach him anything. We, my husband and I, have dealt with him and found that he's actually afraid of being wrong. This seems to be the way he deals with it. This is not unusual. Teenage boys don't like to admit vulnerability. They don't like to admit they're wrong. Now, some ways you can do that, like with school,
mm-hmm.
is you can say, okay, read your lesson, do the problems. If you get to one you can't do, write the numbers top of the page.
Right.
And then call them later and just go over the ones at the top of the page. And if he gets the other ones right,
yeah.
don't worry about it.
Yeah.
He handled it on his own.
Mm-hmm.
If he's struggling and he's not doing well, then you call him back and say, you know, we need to go over this. Now, he may say, I don't need to. Say, okay, fine. Tomorrow, if you get them all right, we won't go over it. But today, we're going over it.
Yeah, and it's hard to get it across to young people, and I've seen this in female as well as male. When they are young, when they are students, when they're enrolled in a class or you're teaching them at home or whatever, the goal in their life is not for them to prove how much they've already known.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is for them to learn everything they can learn, and they've got to be willing, basically, to be quiet and absorb the information.
Yeah.
You know, to sit at the feet of a master, even if the master is some, you know, just mom, to be able to sit still and to listen and to take it all in. And if they already know everything, literally, in that particular lesson, great. It was just good practice and reinforcement. If they knew half of it, well then, half of it is new information they can integrate into their own mental scheme. But that's a tough thing to get across. And just like when they're older, there's a tendency to want to put up a little wall and to be perfect and to, you know, to be impervious and impregnable when really and truly the issue is to get a job done.
Yeah.
And if you run into a snag, you need to run for help as soon as you can and find somebody who can, you know, explain it to you. not to sit there and puzzle over it and waste a lot of time and miss opportunities because, you know, I'm too proud to ask for help. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that is something, and you need to practice it, work it through with them, challenge them where necessary. I remember reading one of the old Puritan books, and they said it's important when you're raising a child that you do things that will basically get them out of their frame, you know, that you'll force them to have to rethink or to stop and wait for directions or basically to submit their will to the authority that's placed over them. You know, we don't want to play gotcha with our kids, but neither do we want to take all of the obstacles out of the way because they're never going to grow if they never have to overcome anything.
Okay, here's one we can handle pretty quickly, I think.
Okay.
What do you suggest to prepare for and what to do when a long-distance relationship is imminent?
Okay.
We have four boys, and I know I need to focus on making the time away from Dad manageable, but I don't want to forget about us, too. I think it's really important to use as much connection as you can have with Dad. If you can Skype with him, have a regular time every day that you Skype, even if it's just a few minutes.
Right.
And make sure that each child gets a moment to talk to them.
Does everybody know what Skype is?
I don't know. SKYPE.com.
This is a free online program. It's basically, it's a phone system. And we discovered it when we had a family member that had moved to China. And we found out, hey, this is the way that we can call them. We can text message. We can transfer files and all sorts of stuff. And it's totally free. Now, if you want to dial out to conventional phone lines, there's a charge for that, but it's very reasonable.
One thing that's been really helpful for us with Skype is we have a family conversation. They have a chat function.
Yes.
And you can group chat, text chat.
Yeah.
And so we have an ongoing family conversation with every member of the family that's old enough to have a computer on it.
And so we've got, so there's three of us here sitting at the house. And we're having a chat from different rooms and different ends of the house.
So there's also a son in Kentucky and a son in Eastern North Carolina. And for a while we had somebody in China or somebody in England.
And it's like being in a conversation together, although you're miles and miles apart. So you can use that kind of thing with your distance. You didn't say where your husband is going to be.
Or how old your boys are.
But that's a useful thing. And it has that video chat function too.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can... That's really important for the very young ones to be able to see Dad and to see, hey, he's still there. He still looks like the Dad I remember. Maybe he's growing a beard. Ooh, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But,
and then send the kids out of the room.
Yeah.
And share your heart. Share what's going on. Talk about it. Ask him for prayer. Ask him what's going on in his life.
Yeah.
Tell him you love him and why.
Yeah.
You know, and make sure that you connect together. But I think communication is critical. If you are limited in your communication, something like Skype chat is useful because somebody can post something at any time, a message for someone, and it'll be there whenever the other person logs in.
That's true. And you know, one thing that you've done that's been a blessing. Sometimes I've had business trips and I was going to be out of town, and you have planted notes in my luggage. You know, if you know that your husband's going to be gone, you could write him a series of notes or letters or something, and even put dates on them. Say, you know, open this one on Monday, open this one on Wednesday, open this one on Friday. You know, just something like that to give them something to draw their hearts back to home and to let them know that you've been thinking about them and to keep them thinking about you. You know?
And if the kids are too young to write, have them make drawings and scan them. And you can attach them to a Skype file and send it to them. You know, do whatever you can to stay connected and tell stories. Talk about it. Remind them what it's like to have Dad home, especially if he's deployed for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Those little kids, you need to keep Daddy alive in their minds, you know?
Yeah, and there's lots of soldiers who would use Skype to read bedtime stories to their kids.
Yes.
You know, they'll get online, they'll have 15 minutes on the computer or whatever, and they'll read a story to the child. And
some dads who knew that they wouldn't be able to get internet access have recorded with their webcam them reading different stories so that Mom could play them later.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. So there's lots of things you can do, some that you can do before they leave, and some you just need to set up and test out so that you can use them while they're gone. And and you're right. You want to maintain the relationship with the children, but you got to keep the couple strong, too.
Yeah.
Okay,
let's see. More questions.
More questions. All right.
I'm looking for the next one we haven't answered.
Is there any other resource we want to recommend right now?
Oh, I guess we better do that.
Yes.
Let's see.
You want to talk about our President's Day giveaway?
Yes, let's do.
You know what? This is President's Day. Now, if you're listening to the recording, probably it's no longer President's Day, but we've pulled together a free downloadable album, okay? One of the projects we've got ongoing is producing an audiobook of Theodore Roosevelt's Hero Tales from American History. We're reading the book. We're adding sound effects and background music. It's really fun, really great stuff. But a lot of those stories also deal with men who were president or who became president after the fact, after the story. And so if you go out to our website, go to raisingrealmen.com, and you can search on presidents, you'll find that there's a download link there. And the collection includes a biography of George Washington, the story of the Battle of Trenton, which is, you know, when he crossed the Delaware, yes, turning point in the Revolution. There's a story about Andrew Jackson at the Battle of New Orleans, okay? There's a story about John Quincy Adams, who, after he was president, was sent back to Washington as a congressman from his district back home. And some of his best work for the country and in the government was after he was president. So there's a story about his time as a congressman. And then there's a chapter in there about just basically the doggedness and persistence of Ulysses S. Grant during the War Between the States. Really interesting stories, and you can find a download link there at our webpage, raisingrealmen.com.
Just scroll down the blog till you get to it.
That's right. Or you can search. You use the little search tab there for presidents or President's Day, okay?
All right. Here's a question I've got a great answer to.
Okay.
All right. Someone asked on the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/raisingrealmen.
Mm-hmm.
Something geared to large families. The dynamic is so very different. Kids are spending most of the time getting the kids to their various activities and not a lot of coming together aside from meals anymore.
Okay.
Oh, boy. We had this.
That's real.
Yeah, we had something going on last summer, and one of our sons walks in and says, "I hate computers." Huh? What? He says, "Everybody's always on the computer around here. We never do anything together anymore." Oh, conviction.
Well, it's true because, you know, we work from home, and much of our work is web-based or it's electronic in some form or another.
And we have so much work to do, it never stops.
And our older boys are doing online courses or using, you know, web-based reference material and such. And so, we spend a lot of time on the computer. And we are fans of computers. Don't understand.
Yeah.
We are not people that are, you know, a pox on screen time. But you need some FaceTime, too.
So our son said, "Can we just turn off all the computers once a week? Just one night a week and have a family night." Oh, we were so convicted. So we said, sure.
Yeah.
Sure, we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have we done it every week? No, we haven't.
No, but the idea is out there, and we do try to remember it. And, you know, recognize that your schedule is your family's schedule. It's not everybody else's. And it may be that I saw something, some discussion this morning. Somebody was asking about how do you deal with getting a day of rest when Sunday is actually extremely busy, running back and forth to church and lots of activities and fellowships and choir practice and two services and all that. And one family said, you know what, we take Monday as our day off. Sunday is busy. We take Monday as our day of rest. Well, you know what, you can set up whatever schedule works for you, but it is important to not to just become a bus terminal in your house.
Right, and so take some time mm-hmm. every week if you can and turn off the outside world. Play games together, watch a movie together and discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
Do something that brings everybody back together because those relationships will be there when all your Facebook friends have gone elsewhere.
And sometimes it's helpful just to sit down with a calendar and just like do a chart and say, here's a block of time that, you know we're going to be at football practice these days at this time. We're going to be, we've got a play rehearsal here or we've got art lessons here. And actually block it out on the schedule so everybody can see it. You know, sit down and talk about
really
it with the
helpful.
Family. And say, you know what? Everybody in this family gets 168 hours a week. No more, no less. And we got to use a certain amount to sleep. I guarantee we're going to sleep and we're going to eat and do some personal stuff. So what are we going to do with the rest of that time? And you got to keep thinking about that because, you know, otherwise it's very easy to waste it. It's very easy to miss opportunities and to strain relationships because of it.
Here's another question.
Okay.
Please talk about family dynamics when it gets tough.
Okay.
I have two sons who tend not to hear my direction and instruction. I often wonder if I'm the voice of one calling out in an empty desert. Sigh. Any ideas on how to direct, instruct, and remain calm when I'm trying to get down to only saying it once? going to say, it depends on the age of your son.
Yeah, you didn't mention the age of the son.
But you're probably never going to get to the point that you're always just saying it once. I hear people say, I require instant obedience from my children, and I think, you know, good luck with that.
Well, okay, let's just talk practical about it, okay? I don't see that that is a commandment in Scripture. You know, that may be a goal that people have, but I don't see that kind of, you know, I'll speak one time and then wham. I don't see that specifically in Scripture.
Well,
and
I think about the son who told his father he wasn't going to go do it.
Yes.
And then he went and did it.
Right.
And the Scripture says,
you know, Jesus asked,
who's
the one who was obedient? It was the one who did, who ultimately did what he was told to do. Now,
are we saying allow your children to get away with disobeying you? No.
No, but let's be frank about it.
Let's be realistic.
The house that we live in was constructed by a home builder. It has extra insulation in the walls. And so if we're sitting in the living room and we call out to somebody upstairs, they're not going to hear us. It's a sound dead house. Okay? Now, how are we going to enforce first time obedience if in order to make that stick, we have to get up out of the chair, walk up to the other end of the house, find the child, put eyeballs on them and say, here's your one warning. Okay? That's, who's being trained there?
And so, recognizing we got to be realistic, what do you do if they are ignoring you?
Mm-hmm.
There's a few things you need to do. First of all, make sure that you're speaking loudly enough that they can hear you. And I don't mean yelling, but I got some bad advice one time from a mother of girls, and she said, lower your voice and talk softly, Melanie. They should be listening to your voice. Boys do not hear the human voice as easily as women do. They didn't even hear me. They just went running by.
That's right.
Now, my daughter,
little girl,
say to her,
can whisper,
honey, come here.
Oh, she'll come running.
Yeah.
She wants to be in on the secret. Yeah. But the guys, they don't even notice. There was a breeze in the house or something. They didn't hear you.
So make sure you're speaking loudly enough they can hear you and that you have their attention.
Yeah.
Voice can be remarkably distractible. And then tell them what you want to do and then have them repeat it back. Say,
yeah.
Okay, what did I just tell you to do? That way you know they heard you, you know they understood, and they're accountable.
And you know what? We sometimes are our own enemies on this because we will say, will somebody do, you know, blank. Will somebody take out the trash? Will somebody let the dog in? Will somebody bring me a glass
of
water?
There's no one in our house named somebody. One of my friends said that today.
And you know what? Okay. We're trying to be nice and let somebody volunteer, but they're busy too, or think they are, and they don't want to move any more than I do. And so it's really much better if I look a child in the eyes and say, hey, son. And when he looks up and say, would you please go check the mail?
Speaking of, I thought I told one of our sons he could not be on the tablet today because he didn't listen to me when I told him to get off of it earlier.
Oh, I did not know about that. Okay. All right. Shut that one down over there.
Close it up.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is real life here at the Young.
That's right. Okay.
Notice I did not say what child that was.
No, we did not. We did not. So, yeah, and especially if they're older, if they're, you're talking teenagers when they're actually, we would say they are young men. Adults in training, then you need to talk with them and be frank. Say, look, I'm trying to be considerate of your time and concentration as I want you to be considerate of mine, but when I call you and say I need something done right away, I really need you to respond and let me know that you heard me and that you are going to comply, or if for some reason you can't, let me know that respectfully so I can get somebody else to help me. All right? Don't just sit there and hope I'll go away. That is disrespect, and that is not acceptable.
And so how do you hold a child responsible? A child who won't get off the computer when you tell them to get off the computer, then, like you just heard, doesn't get to use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gets the time away from it. And I'll remind him the next time you say get off the computer to get off the computer.
And say, how do you get them off the computer? Well, I'll tell you what I heard one family do. One family changed the password on their network hub every day. And they only let their young people know the password for the Wi-Fi hub when all of the schoolwork was done. Whoa.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah.
They have teens. Wow.
Oh, I bet it did
no
the job.
No proof shark.
I bet it did the trick.
I bet it did.
Wow. You know, desperate times call for desperate measures.
So.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, I think we got time for one or two more questions.
Okay,
so
let me find another good one.
Choose wisely.
Okay.
Let's see.
What? Here, we had a private question last week that
Yeah.
Got answered, but the recording was so rotten, I don't think she could hear it.
Yes.
What do you do if you find out that your husband is addicted to internet pornography?
Ooh, that is a tough one. Well, all right, a couple of facts on that, and we don't want to over belabor it, but it's a big issue. The fact of the matter is, it is all around us. You have to actively fight it off, not to be exposed to it or to be drawn into it, particularly as men, although women are having increasing problems with it too. And so if your husband does have a problem, he is far from alone in it. Okay. Now.
And if he makes a few slips, mm-hmm. it's physically addictive. And if you want to hear more about that, we talked about this on an earlier episode of the program.
Right.
Scroll down and look for the one about purity.
Yes.
Because it about internet safety. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
It really is physically addictive, and sometimes guys get drawn in way beyond what they intended, and they have a hard time stopping.
And they can't break it. Yeah.
They can't break it. And so what you need to do is, first of all, recognize this is not a referendum on you or your looks or your satisfaction of your husband.
No.
It really has nothing to do with that.
And
secondly, you're going to need to approach him
mm-hmm.
in love and concern and say, son, honey, you know, we need to talk because I found out that you're looking at internet pornography. And, you know, the Lord said if you look at a woman with lust in your heart, you've committed adultery. And I'm very hurt.
Yeah.
And I'd like for you to stop this. What can I do to help?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when we say addicted, we use that very advisedly. That's people have thrown that around in the past. But this, honestly, the internet pornography changes the chemistry in your brain in such a way that it causes an actual hormonal dependency.
Very similar to the dependency that heroin addiction or alcoholism causes. And so it's going to be hard to stop. And I would really encourage my husband
mm-hmm.
to get help, to get someone who understands
mm-hmm.
to help him and hold him accountable. And you're going to need accountability on all of your internet devices.
Let me encourage you to look up. There's a service called Covenant Eyes.
And if you go to RaisingRealMen.com,
right.
I will put, and you can look in our sidebar.
Yep.
There's an ad for Covenant Eyes there. If you click through there, they'll support our ministry.
Yes.
But we recommend them for years before they offer to do that.
That's right.
But you know you got the right thing if you go click on our site
and
find it.
So if you go out there, follow that link to their site, check out their accountability software. It's very inexpensive and it works very well, and they'll explain it all there.
And
but
I highly recommend if your husband is addicted,
yes,
that you have that the accountability doesn't just go to you, but also goes to a trusted friend who hold him accountable, or a pastor, elder of your church,
right?
Because he's going to need somebody other than you to hold him accountable,
right? Yeah, he is, and they have some tremendous resources out on their website too, from the perspective of a pastor, whether a pastor who's counseling somebody or a pastor who has this addiction himself. For things for the wife who has been hurt by this kind of thing, things for the husband who's trying to break free from this addiction, all kinds of resources out there. So we cannot recommend them too highly. All right. So be sure to check them out. Come to our website at RaisingRealMen.com and click on the link to go out to Covenant Eyes. Okay.
Yes, we are out of time now.
We certainly are. Well, this has been fun. I'll tell you
what,
we need to save some of these questions because this is really good stuff. Maybe we should do a few of them each week.
Maybe we need to do some blog posts on some of these things and go into more detail.
More better, even so. Okay. Well, we really thank you for coming. We hope that you'll join us again. Now, we're here every Monday night at 9 o'clock on the Eastern time zone, but you can see us out on iTunes, and you can listen to us streaming on the UltimateRadioShow.com website.
And please tell your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Share with them. Suggest they come out. Send them a link to the download if you've enjoyed the show.
That's right. So, until next time, you've been listening to Hal
and Melanie,
and this is Making Biblical Family Life Practical. Thanks for joining us.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/Hal and Melanie or Facebook.com/ Raising Real Men. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.